Full Story is supported by Australian Industry Group, Australia's largest and most experienced industry association. From workplace laws to skills shortages and compliance, Australian businesses face challenges every day. Supporting over 60,000 businesses nationwide, Australian Industry Group is Australia's trusted business partner for compliance, advocacy and growth. Members enjoy the benefits of instant HR and legal advice, along with access to a team of experts in workplace relations, compliance, legal, skills development, apprenticeships, and more. Whether you're shaping strategy, managing people, or driving operations, Australian Industry Group exists to help businesses of all sizes thrive. Learn more and join today at australianindustrygroup.com.au.
Ed Husic, welcome to Full Story.
Hi, Noah. How are you?
The Australian government invited Isaac Herzog to visit after the Bondi attack. The Prime Minister says he looks forward to welcoming him to Australia, and the visit is intended to foster a sense of unity. Do you think it will do that?
I think it can be seen from a number of different perspectives. Let me start with just an initial one. I'm obviously very uncomfortable about this visit, largely because President Herzog has said some things that have attempted to sheet home responsibility for October 7 to an entire population. This had attracted the attention of the International Court of Justice, and you've got, you know, obviously indictments from the International Criminal Court that are at play, and it's really hard for me to reconcile the vision of him signing bombs that went on to be dropped on Palestinian homes, to reconcile that vision with the notion of social cohesion. So from that perspective, I've obviously got deep concerns. However, I said to you that there are a number of perspectives or angles from which you could look at it. Yeah, Mr. Herzog believes that he's been badly misrepresented by some of the things that I've reflected on. Well, he has a chance to, and I remain open to it, because I think we at this time need to all be peacemakers. If he has a view about how to chart a course for peace that can see Palestinians savour their own statehood, see an end to the violence, and obviously, you know, they're very focused, the Netanyahu government, on the safety of Israelis, understandably. If that can all be reconciled in a way that shows that Mr. Herzog can be a leader in championing that, and he's going to use the visit to outline how he thinks peace can be brought about and that we can end the bloodshed and ensure that people have their own homes to live in, well, then let's see. I think really it's something, it's a moment that presents itself that he should seize. But in the absence of that, I just don't see how his visit would add, given the concerns that exist around his positioning. And he's part of the leadership of a nation that has undertaken, or its conduct has failed to distinguish between civilian and combatant in devastating ways, when you see the number of people that have been killed. And for me, and on this point, the hardest thing for me has been the impact on children. They should not be shouldering the burden for what happened on October 7. And we should have leaders be able to say that's not the way to go.
Okay, so you say you're uncomfortable about his visit. Was it a mistake for Australia to invite him?
I'm not going to couch it in those terms. I genuinely wish there was some other alternative that was explored. As a member of the party, as a parliamentarian who represents Labor, I'm entitled to have a differing view, and my view is I don't think that this was a good decision, but it's going to happen. Nothing I can say about that is going to stop that. And I just think that people should be able to express a difference of opinion, but do so in a way that, given the sensitivities of our time that we're in at the moment, that we do it in a way that doesn't further divide Australians, but says there could have been a better way. And I think the better way is that he wasn't invited, but that decision has been made.
Okay, there are people calling for his invitation to be rescinded. Clearly, you don't think that that will happen. Others say that if he does arrive in Australia, then he should be investigated. Do you support calls for there to be an investigation by the AFP? People say that we have an obligation under international law to investigate Isaac Herzog.
As I said before, when I reflected on the comments that he made and the actions that he's taken, and the fact that there is an international tribunal that has focused on that, that is serious. Whether or not the AFP or others decide to investigate those issues, that will be to them. I certainly do not think that those international bodies should be frustrated in any attempt to investigate or hold responsible people that, you know, were killed through the course of October 7 and beyond. Hamas is absolutely accountable for its actions and should be held accountable for its actions. But the decisions made through the conduct of the campaign in Gaza are equally requiring accountability too. People that have made innocent sacrifice their lives, that they are targeted. This is simply wrong. And anyone who put innocent people in that position should be held accountable. And some of the debate that I noticed over the course of the last 12 months, Nora, about, you know, whether or not it was right to even indict, you know, Mr. Netanyahu, where does the buck stop ultimately? If the ICJ, if the ICC are making calls on that, mm-hmm. I noted particularly from the coalition, they're expressing outrage that occurred. And my view is, well, if the coalition are big on law and order, they can't select what law or what order that they will adhere to. And I think there are serious issues that are at stake. The accountability needs to be held. And everyone involved, regardless of if it's Mr. Netanyahu, any of the other people that were involved in the campaign, anyone in Hamas that was responsible for October 7, they all must face accountability.
Mm. There are people who are saying they will protest, many protesting on Monday in mm-hmm. opposition to Isaac Herzog's visit. Last year, you marched on the Harbour Bridge alongside two of your New South Wales state Labor colleagues. Mm-hmm. They say they'll be marching on mm-hmm. Monday as part of these mm-hmm. Nationwide protests. Will you?
I'm in Canberra for parliamentary sittings, so obviously I can't be there. But on the issue, can I just reflect on the issue of marches? And you talked about the fact that I participated in the March for Humanity. I know post the horrific events of Bondi, a lot of things were said in a moment where there was a lot of fear and anger and grief. And so I didn't necessarily respond to everything at the time. I do think it's a massive slight against Australians who had genuine concern about what they were seeing in Gaza and who came out in record numbers, who have marched peacefully week in, week out to show the depth of their concern, that be linked to that horrific event we saw in Bondi. The ability for people to suggest that the March for Humanity led to the horror of Bondi is simply wrong and is a slur against, you know, In particular, when I marched, I saw a lot of Middle Australia out there on that bridge. And I reckon there were a lot of people there that had never taken part in a protest like that. And they did it because they were driven, similar to the concerns I expressed to you earlier, about the impact, especially on children, especially on women. The number of women and children that were killed as a result of the actions in Gaza were staggering. And people wanted to be able to say, we don't support this and we expect that our government will speak up on this and that they'll work with the international community to stop this. And I just want to say for Australians that have expressed that concern, you know, that they should not have been marginalised in that way. They should not have been singled out in that way. I appreciate it was a horrendous time. People will say things in the heat of the moment. But now that we have an opportunity to calmly reflect on what's gone on, I think we should just be very clear that peaceful protest has a place in democracies, in particular, to be able to allow people to express their concern, for them to influence the decisions of government in a way that is peaceful and is designed with good public purpose, that there is a place for that in our society, and it should not be denigrated in the way I think was horrendously done so after the terror of December 14.
A couple of things I'd like to pick up on. If there are protests in Canberra out on the lawn outside Parliament House, will you join them on Monday?
I hadn't contemplated that. I think I'm speaking up, quite frankly, with yourself right now in terms of my view about President Herzog's visit. We'll see what happens in terms of next week. I have participated in some of the activity that's happened before Parliament, and the hardest thing for me, Noor, was reading out the names of kids that had been killed through the course of what happened in Gaza. And I will always speak up where I think that in particular innocent people have been made a target of something that they should never have been. They have a entitlement, that they have a right to be able to live their life to the fullest and not have that taken away. I speak about those kids in Gaza. I was affected by the killing of 10-year-old Matilda at Bondi. They deserve to have a life rich with their own experiences. No one should have the right to take that away from them.
On the broader issue of protests, particularly in New South Wales, have you expressed your concerns to the state's Premier, Chris Minns, and do you have any concerns about efforts in New South Wales to ban slogans?
I haven't specifically spoken to the Premier about the recent changes. Obviously, you know, I don't go into the conversations I have with the Premier, but I do make the point to my New South Wales colleagues that, you know, there are people that are particularly concerned about what's happening in Gaza, and they're concerned especially, I've made the point, that there's an element of survivor guilt for a lot of people. For a lot of people from that part of the world that have been able to start a life here and have seen what's happened to family and friends and have been impacted by the fact that they've sidestepped that gruesome reality in Gaza. And there is a lot of that, and people feel the weight of that. And I've seen that in different communities through different conflicts in times past. And from an ethnic background myself, I'm fully aware of that. So I think it's important that people understand when people go out and protest. I would like to ask people consider when they use this phrase about importing conflict, which we hear quite a bit. There are a lot of people that they cannot be expected to turn up to Australia and then excise from their lives, completely forget who they are and where they came from, and the fact that they may have family and friends in that part of the world. They will never turn their back on people they care about, and nor should they be expected to. And if you accept that proposition, you also accept that people should be able to express a view that they're horrified about what's happening, they're anxious about what will happen to family and friends, and they want to know what their government's view is on that, and they will do that in a number of ways, which may include public protest, and that shouldn't be clamped down. And I don't think it's healthy. Equally, I think while people express their views, they should not do so in a way that incites hate or violence, correct? But at the same time, it shouldn't be assumed that just because they're protesting that it will lead to that. And it should also be understood that if people are prevented from protesting, then that creates that just basically captures pressure that will continue to build. And we don't need that. People need to be able, I think it's a healthy thing for people to be able to express their views, as long as they're doing it in a way that's not, as I said before, inciting hate, inciting violence. And I think a lot of the protests that we have seen that have occurred week in, week out, you haven't seen evidence of that. You've certainly seen evidence with some of the other protests that have been organised by the far right, and you've seen evidence of that. But to equate the two simply is not sustainable on the basis of what we've seen.
I want to expand the conversation. Earlier this week you delivered a speech that was about what you described as the scapegoating of entire communities. You are Muslim. You were the first MP to be sworn in on the Quran. How bothered have you been, how concerned have you been by some of the language being used by elected representatives in Parliament, particularly over recent weeks?
So I've been concerned about the rise of extremism for a while, and it crystallised post-Christchurch when we saw Australian white supremacists go to New Zealand and slaughter 51 people on the basis of being Muslim. And ASIO has charted that for 6 years, saying that they've been concerned about it. And post-Christchurch, I thought the exemplar in terms of response to a traumatic event like that was obviously Jacinda Ardern, who consoled and comforted, but also was prepared to take the steps to protect New Zealanders from the impact of that type of hate. And I think we need to be emulating that in the aftermath of Bondi, bringing people together. But I've seen some really deeply disturbing and quite contrary effort where we've been asked, especially by one side of politics and notably the opposition leader, say we needed to confront hard truths, and then talked about the role of radical Islamist extremism being responsible for all this. And then it sort of triggered, I think, nearly 90 different references to radical Islamic extremists, extremism, and also the reference to radical Islam. So a whole notion of radicalism attached to Islam itself. And I think people need to be very conscious of their words and conscious of, we do not sheet home collective responsibility to entire communities for the actions of extremist individuals. Like, that should be the notion that rallies us all together to go, we tackle the extremist element, but we don't blame the whole group. And we certainly then don't use that as a platform, for instance, as former Prime Minister Scott Morrison has suggested, that we accredit Islamic imams and that if they don't do it in some basis, they're deficient or suspect. I don't think that driving people into dark corners to nurture fear and grievance is a wise thing for modern democracies to be doing, and particularly democracies that want to be socially cohesive.
You suggested in your speech that Scott Morrison's suggestion would send us down the path of replicating an abominable chapter in history. What did you mean by that?
Well, there have been points in our world history where people have been singled out on the basis of their faith and forced to wear, wear distinguishing features, armbands or whatever, that as to what their faith was and who they were. And I thought we got beyond that. I thought we need to think through about, once we start down this path of, you know, uncomfortable truths, as it's been described, you know, where are we headed? And the issue with the coalition is that they're only prepared to discuss uncomfortable truths if they're comfortable with the truths being discussed. I mean, you know, they took umbrage, actually. It's important to note, when the ASIO Director General said that right-wing extremism was on the rise, the biggest thing that the coalition objected to was the fact that it was called right-wing, and they said you had to be careful about labels. But there's no care given by them when they label other people. And the reason I'm emphasising this, Nora, is because I think we need to be, as parliamentarians, focused on how we bring people together at this traumatic time. And everyone has a part to play, but particularly parliamentarians need to be conscious of the words that they use and the way that they have used that, the reason behind using those particular words, and be conscious about that, because that is not the way, and it's certainly not the way that Jacinda Ardern did it. And certainly Jacinda Ardern did not come on after a result of 51 of her citizens being killed in those two mosques in Christchurch. She didn't go onto Australian media and blame the Australian Prime Minister or the Australian government for what had occurred, unlike what we saw post-Bondi. I think the way we do it is that we work together to drive out hate, and we do that by standing as close as we can to each other to make that a reality.
Mm. Liberal MP Andrew Bragg went on to say that the Australian Muslim community has to take some responsibility for the behaviour of essentially terrorists who share their faith. There are an estimated 1 million Muslims in Australia. What is the social impact of comments like that? Have people reached out to you?
Well, I think people – I come back to the point. I mean, Senator Bragg is smarter than that. Look, I can't believe that a person would not be conscious of the impact of their words. So if that person is bright enough to know what they're saying, then they're saying it deliberately, and I think that's wrong, one. Two, as I reflected a few moments ago, and I think I dare say a lot of people listening to the podcast would agree, we don't blame entire communities for extremist individuals. We don't. And the suggestion that people endorse murder until they say that they don't, you know, which is implicit in some of these statements. I mean, we've seen Andrew Hastie in times past make the point that, if I can get his quote, where he has said that it's time for the Australian Muslim leadership to systematically and clearly make the case that Islam is a religion of peace. Now, these are people who are senior figures in a major political party making those comments. How does that bring the country together, I wonder? We need to have a better way of behaving, and I think people, you know, Australian Muslims make a great contribution to our country and want to do so in a way that's peaceful and also recognises the opportunity that they've been given, particularly if they've, you know, made Australia a country of choice rather than birth. And there are people, Muslims of birth as well, that want to make the place better and leave something that's better than what they inherited. And I think we should focus on that more. And I think we should be bringing people together. And I'm not tarring all liberals and nationals with the same brush, because that's just as bad. But I do think I would urge them, and I'd urge everyone in the parliament, to recognise we can play a positive role in bringing people together while still taking a stand against terror.
We'll be right back.